Today on Seculo, a new poll shows a historic drop of support of Kamala Harris.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls, too, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 if you want to be on the broadcast today. This is new. There are some very interesting polls. That when you've got battles for both Hispanic and Latino voters as well as black voters. So I want to go back to 2020 when Joe Biden was on the ticket. He got 59% of the Latino vote, 92% of the black vote. Right now in 2024, Harris is only at 38% of the Latino vote. So that's a 21% difference in where Joe Biden was. This was campaigning from the basement. And on the black vote, where you'd think, okay, Harris, who kind of re-energized the black vote, supposedly put places like Georgia in, you know, not just into play, but like probably into the category for Democrats we heard early on. It's just not coming along that way. So, for instance, Joe Biden got 92% of the black vote. Harris, 72%. 20-point differences both among the Latino and black vote, even the Arab American vote. This is why there's a protest today in Minnesota at the University of Minnesota where pro-Palestinian protesters have taken over one of the student buildings at the University of Minnesota. So that is going on and happening. But I think what's interesting there is that even there, the identity group politics will of the black vote, the Latino vote, even the Arab American vote. It's not just about, well, see, we're going to be, they're the ones that are more questioning Israel. So we're going to go with Democrats because they are the ones saying that Israel has committed and killed way too many people in the Gaza Strip. So maybe it'll be a better choice for us. And yet we're not seeing that. We might see that amongst the Palestinian American vote, but not the Arab American vote. And we're starting to see the same thing happen, even bigger numbers amongst the black vote and Latino vote.
That's right, Jordan. And the Democrat Party for a long time has played identity politics as kind of their entire strategy. They separate people into groups based off of racial demographics, geolocation, things of that nature, and say, these are a given for us, so then we have to just go after kind of these top line numbers, and that's how we win. But what we're seeing is finally, hopefully, a crumbling of their strategy of playing identity politics to win elections. Because when you're seeing 20% drops from the incumbent president's poll numbers back in 2020 to what now the incumbent vice president as the lead ticket, when you see this deterioration by 20 points or more, it really calls into question, is the Democrat strategy of playing racial identity politics finally coming to an end? Because when you start telling people you have to vote this way because of your demographic categories, whether it be race, location, age, people start to eventually get fed up with that and say, we are people, we are Americans, and we're going to vote for what's the best choice for us, not just because you're telling me, because I'm a Latino voter, I have to vote this way. And these poll numbers are showing a fracture in the Democratic stronghold of playing identity politics, and hopefully that era is coming to an end.
Yeah, I mean, in the 7 weeks between the two polls, Harris lost ground among Latino voters who now support President Trump 49% to 38%, and among black voters. They favor Harris 72% to 17%, a 55-point advantage. But that is well below where Democrats traditionally fare. That's not high enough for the Democrats. They can't get across the aisle with just 72% when they are used to getting 92% of that vote. So I think so many voters are saying, listen, I'm voting for the best candidate for me and my family, not the best candidate for the racial group I may be part of, or because it looks good for my racial group if someone from that group is president of the United States, and that people are past that now because they are so worried about where they are individually. We want you to support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. The Biden-Harris DOJ filed a lawsuit to allow illegal immigrants to vote. We're fighting back. We told you about the Virginia case last week, and now we're preparing to file yet another brief. mean, think about this number. Only 25% of voters right now have not yet made a decision, they think. About 25% of voters have not made a decision on whether to vote for Donald Trump or Harris. That's what it's down to, about 25% of voters. That means 75% of voters already know where they're going to cast a vote, whether that's in early voting, absentee voting, or on election day voting. And I think that that is huge when you look at these demographic falls for Harris. I mean, basically, I just want to get to it again just so people realize that when you go from getting 59% of the Latino vote in the last cycle to 38%, there's a number of states that come into play. Like, that's why President Trump right now is only down, what, 3 points in New Mexico, Will?
That's right. Yeah, there was a poll that came out that had President Trump only down 3 points in New Mexico yesterday. There's a lot of other kind of surprising polls. You even look at New York. New York doesn't get polled a lot, but one of the more recent polls showed that he was only losing to Harris in New York by 9 points compared to losing in the final vote by more than 20 to Joe Biden. When you cinch these numbers up across the country, and you realize that in 2020, which was a hotly contested election, that the election came down to only tens of thousands of votes in Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and Pennsylvania. Altogether, you're talking the low hundreds of thousands of votes. When you start seeing 20% drops in voting blocks that the Democrats have relied on for generations, for decades, of saying that we can almost assure that this voting bloc is going for us, like 92% or 59%, then you start to see a 20% drop. Those are real numbers that a campaign has to freak out about, because that isn't like, okay, well, we're going to win the popular vote by 1.5 million votes, so this doesn't cover it. No, where it does cover it is when you get to these swing states that come down to just tens of thousands of votes, and you're already seeing the early number voting skyrocket compared to 2020. You are seeing that Republicans have become more comfortable with the idea of early voting. As an anecdote, I early voted yesterday. Tennessee has had early voting for as long as I've lived here. It actually was kind of one of the early adopters for a southern red state of early voting. I've early voted in almost every election in Tennessee since 2008 when I moved here. And the voting, and normally those, you walk right in, you cast your vote, you walk out. That's kind of the ease of it. I went yesterday, suburban Nashville, waited 30 minutes outside before even getting in the building on a Monday in the middle of the afternoon. Yeah. After lunch break, before people off work, 30 minutes in line to get in the door, get inside. There's a 4-turn queue line once you get inside. So about another 8 minutes in that before I even check in. And they had 7 registrars working. Wow. It wasn't just 2 people on a Monday, 7 people moving people through. This isn't a competitive state for president, really, even for the Senate race, or even, I would say, for the congressional races. People are voting in large numbers here in a way I've not seen in an early voting scenario that forecasts to me, if that's happening in a red state, this turnout is going to be massive across the country. And if you're losing 20% in these key voting blocks for the Democrat Party, basing their entire strategy for presidential elections off targeting a coalition of demographics, I think it spells real trouble for Election Day for Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I mean, if we finish anything close, like on the Latino vote, where, again, Harris is only at 38%, so she's under 50 on the Latino vote, which means Donald Trump has got the majority of the Latino vote, and that on the Black vote, she's only up on Donald Trump, you know, about 22 points instead of what would usually be 92. So you'd be considerably up, like 40 points on where, or more on where, more like 50 points on where Donald Trump was. So, like, the fact that both in Latino vote, the Black vote, and even the Arab American vote, even with the protests and some of this anti-Israelism we've seen on college campuses and in major cities, and we're seeing it today in Minnesota, that obviously most Arab voters do not feel like they have to stand in solidarity with Hamas or the Palestinians. Will, they want to vote for the person they think is best for their small business and for their family.
Well, and Jordan, to that point, so a recent poll from YouGov found that Trump is leading Kamala Harris 45% to 43% among Arab Americans. You've seen in Michigan a Yemeni American business owner that came out. He's a restaurant owner, a very popular restaurant that came out in support and did a video for Donald Trump. Rick Grenell said he even met with that restaurant owner while he was in Michigan. You're seeing things like the leader of that city that has the first majority Arab American city council in history. The mayor of that town came out and endorsed President Trump. And these are areas that, based off the way that we've been told by the media, by the Harris campaign, by the Biden administration, that Arab Americans are going to reject anyone that is fully endorsing Israel, standing behind our strongest ally in the Middle East, because and it's going to backfire for anyone that stands that way on American values and principles in the election. But it seems that they misplayed their hand there. They catered to the radicals and the terrorist supporters that support Hamas on college campuses for over a year. And now what we're seeing is that that's not translating to the people that are voting. It doesn't translate to the Ivy League educated teenagers and early 20-year-olds that may or may not show up to vote, but it is not translating 100% to the communities when they are looked at as a voting bloc and not as Americans, not as people who will vote the best decision for their family, for their business. And I'm shocked at some of these polls because of what the media and Democrat strategists and politicians have told us for years and years. But the reality is, when you're looking at this, you're starting to see a fracture in the strategy that Democrats have used for decades.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this. In fact, I want to take a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Carlos in California on line one. Hey, Carlos.
Hi. Hey, guys. Just really excited to call in and let you guys know that this Saturday here in California, Los Angeles County, the voting centers will be opening up. And I'm looking forward to it. Go cast my vote for Donald Trump and go down the Republican ticket.
Well, I think that's awesome. And first of all, it's going to be big in California because you may be in a district where city council races are important, DA races are important, as well as local elections, whether it's state or state house or state senate. And then, of course, you move to the congressional side as well as the Senate side, but also the presidential side. Here's why it's important for all Republicans and conservatives in California to come out big for Donald Trump. It's not that you're going to win the popular vote as a Republican in California right now, but the more votes we can find for President Trump, if he is victorious on Election Day, based off the Electoral College votes and getting to 270, we want to make sure that the left is not able to easily point out and say, you know what, this is some kind of scam. You know, these people were bought off or somehow like this. These people, how could they possibly be voting for President Trump? We saw the mockery yesterday of McDonald's. I mean, the fact that we are getting that President Trump is still to this day being mocked because of the move he made yesterday, which many have said was brilliant, Will, of just him coming out the window and waving to his supporters, because it showed, one, he's not afraid to go anywhere. He'll go to a UFC match, a college football game, a pro football game, because he knows when he walks in a lot of these rooms, he's going to get major cheers from the entire stadium. And we saw that in Pittsburgh. We've seen it in college football games as well. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, what Democrats are then going to try to do is keep people on the voter rolls. So we know, for instance, that Florida has had to sue the Biden-Harris administration over the alleged refusal to remove illegal voters. And in Florida, the federal government not providing that info to Florida. I go back to Virginia, where the DOJ, I mean, the Department of Justice and the DNC together are working to say, no, you can't remove, 6,000 people from the Virginia ballot or make sure they're not on there, even though they voluntarily clicked that they are in fact non-citizen residents. So if you're non-citizen but legally here, you cannot vote. And I think it's important that we tell those folks not to gaslight them and think that they can show up and make sure they don't get mailers in their mailbox acting like they should and can go vote, because then they're committing crimes. as a non-citizen, especially if it doesn't get caught initially, and through research later on in the next month, we find that there were all these people voting who had no right to vote because they were not U.S. citizens. And yet the Department of Justice, even when it comes down to, well, you know, 6,000, which again is a big number in Virginia, but it's 6,000 people who said, I don't have a right to vote yet. I am not a citizen of the United States. And they signed on, they made that clear. And yet, out of those 6,000, the Department of Justice, the Harris administration, they're suing Harris and Biden. They're suing, saying, you can't remove those folks, even though they told you they're not there legally. Listen, the Biden-Harris DOJ has filed a lawsuit to allow these illegal immigrants to vote. They want them on the voter rolls. You just heard about Virginia. We're now preparing to file an amicus brief in Florida. And Will, that brief is, of course, we can talk about it later when we come back. That brief is because that Ron DeSantis is asking for the information about who is here illegally that we know, who checked those boxes, and the Biden administration won't give them the info. Donate today, ACLJ. The Department of Justice, Harris, Biden, they are suing, again, they are suing in, to try and prevent Virginia from removing 6,000 people from the voter rolls who voluntarily are here legally, by the way, but are not citizens, and thus they mark that. They want to make sure they're not going to get a ballot. They want to make sure they're not going to get election information that would confuse them and think that they actually could go and cast a ballot, which, again, we know is a problem with ballot security and election security, but it's also, we want to protect and help those people who should not be voting in the United States because legally they would be committing a crime by doing so. And I think it's very important that we point out that the left doesn't care. They would, if they really were confident in how they were going to do in Virginia, Will, these 6,000 voters who legally can't vote shouldn't be a lawsuit.
That's right. As well as you see the action that's now happening in Florida, where the DOJ and the Department of Homeland Security,
yes, the other way around,
other agencies aren't being helpful to Florida to try and ensure that their voter rolls are going the way they should within the Constitution of the United States. They're not helping. So the Ron DeSantis administration in Florida is actually suing the government, trying to get the DOJ and the Department of Homeland Security and other agencies within the administration to help out and make sure that their elections are run fairly. But the administration doesn't want to help. We're looking at getting engaged there as soon as we can. Our attorneys are working on it right now, and we will be filing in that as well. But I also want to bring up, and we have Harry Hutchison here, who has spent a lot of his life and career in the Detroit area. You were a law professor in the Detroit area, and you know quite a bit about the politics, the administration, the way that Detroit, unfortunately, has unfolded over the decades as one of the major cities in the United States.
The idea that Lizzo, I'll play it for everybody, said that somehow we want the United States to look like Detroit is very bold, because last time I was in Detroit, it still kind of got those wastelands of houses.
Right.
There are areas that they've tried to improve. There are nice suburban areas outside of Detroit because there's a lot of auto executives. But at the same time, when you look at the actual numbers there, I just want to play for you Lizzo. This is at a campaign rally a few days ago about how she thinks it'd be great if every city was just like Detroit. Take a listen.
I'm so proud to be from this city. You know, they say if Kamala wins, then the whole country will be like Detroit. Okay? Proud like Detroit. Resilient like Detroit.
I mean, Harry, Detroit residents, some of them, of course, are very proud of their city. They are tied to the city. They want to make the city better. But the idea, again, is that the whole country will be like Detroit, that that is somehow good because they'll be proud like Detroit and resilient like Detroit. Except for, Harry, every time I'm in Detroit, I'm looking around going, you know, they built some new nice things. But at the same time, there's a lot of empty homes. There's a lot of boarded up homes. And there's a lot of, it's a very dangerous place to be and a very dangerous place to live right now.
You're absolutely correct. So Lizzo refuses to face the hard facts. So if you actually look long and hard at Detroit, if you look at Detroit through the eyes of reality, you find that Detroit currently ranks as the eighth highest major U.S. city in rape. A rape rate that's about 3 times higher today than it was on a per capita basis in 1960. First in aggravated assaults. Third for murders, with a murder rate, again, approximately 3 times higher today on a per capita basis than 1960. Detroit offers nothing less than a brilliant model for how not to run a city properly, with high crime rates, massive budget deficits, failing public schools, and one of the most emotionally distressed populations in the United States. These are the hard facts that Lizzo's glitz and glam tour cannot hide. And guess what? After her speech lauding Detroit, she jumps on a private jet and goes back to California. And so one of the things that we ought to ask Lizzo, if Detroit's such a wonderful place, then why doesn't she live there along with the common folk?
Yeah, I mean, this is the truth, Will. I mean, of all the cities I've been to in the U.S., there's a couple that I've seen that can be pretty, that have been downtrodden for years, not just because of riots in the past couple of years or few years or COVID. Detroit is one of those cities where it does have a lot of potential. There are a lot of nice neighborhoods in the Detroit suburbs, obviously, because of the auto industry and the other industries that surround the auto industry. At the same time, when you drive through Detroit, there are areas of Detroit that are complete wastelands, boarded up homes that don't look like they will ever be lived in again.
That's right. And I think you can also look at Detroit as a model for government corruption, government waste, inside deals with business leaders or union leaders to further that corruption. Those aren't necessarily things that Detroiters should be proud of, because it does have a long history of seeing the government being ineffective at providing basic needs and necessities for the people of their city. And if they're saying that a Kamala Harris administration would be like Detroit, America would be like Detroit, I don't think that's really the messaging that Kamala Harris is wanting to put out there.
I think that's precisely correct. In addition to the points that you've just made, Will, it's important to keep in mind that Detroit has a distinguished reputation for ultimately sending its mayor and other politicians to jail as evidence of their corruption. Secondarily, having lived in Detroit, we should note that at any moment in time, a riot could break out. And thirdly, many parts of Detroit have been turned back into farmland. Why? Because the areas are so desolate. The schools are so bad. The crime is so high. So at the end of the day, Detroit is a quintessential example of how not to properly run a city. And it's important for listeners to note, Lizzo wants to make sure that all of America looks like Detroit. I would recommend that the people reject this bizarre idea.
Let's go to the phones. We're going to go to the phones when we come back, because I really want to let you know what we're planning to do. So the election is 14 days away. As the left is falling behind, they're desperately fighting against election integrity. They'll do anything to stay in power. The Biden-Harris DOJ, as you know, filed a lawsuit to allow illegal immigrants to vote. We told you about the Virginia case last week. We are preparing to file an amicus brief in the Florida case as well, where Florida is taking on the Biden-Harris administration, saying you're not providing us the data on people who are in our state that are not citizens and thus not entitled to vote. Why are you failing to provide the data? And we know exactly why, Will. They're failing to provide the data because they need a few thousand extra votes right now, if you're Harris, and you think you could potentially get it out of a group who, again, may not be here legally, but could end up on the voter rolls.
And unfortunately, what you've seen both out of Virginia and Florida, it's almost as if the Department of Justice has found a loophole of a certain period of time before an election where they're saying, it doesn't matter if you're on the roll and you're not legally allowed to vote. That's not going to stand. The ACLJ is fighting this. We will continue to fight it from today and beyond the election. And that's why you can go to ACLJ.org. You can donate to help us in this, or you can also go to ACLJ.org/vote and sign our petition to defend election integrity. We're just at 30,000 signatures away from reaching our goal. You can be one of those people today. ACLJ.org/vote. Sign the petition to protect election integrity and donate while you're there. ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
We're going to start answering some questions for people, too, because there are a lot of good questions that are coming in about voting. And for instance, people are saying, you know, what happens if we see this on election? And by the way, the ACLJ, what I'm preparing to do, and we've been working with our attorneys, and we've got it like pretty much set to go. We'll probably launch it next week. And by the way, if you need help before next week, you can also always go to aclj.org/help right now. So go to aclj.org/help. If you're having trouble with early voting, if you're questioning, are you in a place where you can early vote? Where do you find out about that information? What do you do if you got a ballot sent to you and you're in a state that does allow you to drop that ballot off? What do you think is the best way to move forward? You know, we can assist you there if you think you've got just, if you're confused. And also, if you do think you have a legal issue, like did you go and try to vote early and you had a problem and weren't allowed to vote, but you've never had that problem before in the state in the voting, especially with early voting where it usually loosens up where you can vote. Sometimes you still have to vote inside your county. Other times you can vote anywhere in the state, Will, because it pulls up your voter registration so it knows where you are. So it also can track what other races, not just the statewide races, but if you've got any local races in your district, you know, that you could be voting on, then it'll pull that up as well. So it's very important to always contact us now. The earlier the better at aclj.org/help. We are going to launch a more significant election integrity unit inside the ACLJ probably in the next week or so. So we can not only answer your questions, but if you need to get to attorneys, we are putting together these attorneys right now in states across the country, as well as, of course, ACLJ attorneys who may say, hey, this is something the ACLJ needs to assist in. So we are going to be doing that as well. Of course, we always encourage you on the broadcast to, again, get out there, vote early if you're allowed to. Some states don't have it. Most states do. And that's different than absentee voting. So you're going to be using the same machine. Right now, we're seeing record numbers, so you still may have to wait a bit, but it's good if you can plan. And the reason why is, like, I know I'm going to vote here in Tennessee before early voting is done. I haven't picked my day yet because I'm looking at my kid's schedule, my schedule, ACLJ schedule, and kind of decide when's the best day for me and set an hour aside. I mean, don't just assume you're going to be able to walk into any place and vote in 5 minutes. You might be able to in some locations, depending on the time of day. But if you take it during your lunch break right now in a state that's getting a lot of turnout, Will, likely if you do that, you're going to be having to wait. Now, it's not going to be the kind of wait that you may have to go through on election day when there's only one place you're allowed to vote.
That's right. And as I mentioned earlier, I thought it would be a relatively quick turnaround here in Tennessee, not a super competitive state in the president or Senate races. There's only four races actually on the ballot for me. It was a very short one-page ballot, but it took more than 40 minutes from standing in line. I set a timer because I'm like, oh, this could be a good information for radio tomorrow. But I set a timer, took more than 40 minutes to wait in line, get inside, and actually cast that ballot, walk out with the sticker. So it's not necessarily, oh, I'm in a state that's not as competitive, it won't take that long. Make sure you allow some time. Maybe ask a friend that's already early voted, how long did it take? So you can plan. So you don't get there, realize there's a long line, and then abandon your plan to vote, because that's even worse. Then at that point, you're going to have to reschedule and figure out when to get there. Make a plan to vote. Make sure you go do it. It's your constitutional right to do it. It's your civic duty to do it. Get out there and do it. And make sure you have that plan so there's not a surprise when you get there and you have a little bit of a wait. You thought you'd just walk right in.
We come back. Rick Rennell, who has been all over the country, and today I think he is with President Trump because President Trump is in Miami. I think Rick is also going to be joining us from Miami. He's going to be in most of the battleground states the next few weeks. So he's going to be joining us in the next segment of the broadcast. Then we'll get to your phone, more of your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So right now, we are building up our election integrity effort. But if you've got concerns today, I want to encourage you to, as always, support the work of the ACLJ so that we're ready to answer your questions as they come in. Is it about early voting? Is it same-day voting? We're putting together attorneys across the country we can refer you to so you can get answers and action quickly if you contact us at aclj.org/help. But we need the resources to do it, so donate today. To Secular. Rick Rennell is joining us now. And Rick, I usually would not use you to discuss McDonald's or even a campaign stop at McDonald's. But, I mean, you're an expert in foreign policy, national security, intelligence, but you're also a campaign guy and a communications expert, too. So Donald Trump goes to the McDonald's, okay? And it's crazy, but we're still actually talking about this now, just 2.5 days later. And the media is still just, like, breaking down. I mean, we saw MSNBC is like, what is he thinking? What is he lost his mind? I mean, they're trying to spin it that way. But in reality, it's a straight on dig against Kamala Harris, who says she worked there, but it's not in her book. And as Snopes and all those places have gone through, they can't find anyone that can confirm she ever told them she worked at a McDonald's even once. I mean, so again, kind of bizarre that you talk about it now in your life story, but you don't include it in the book about your life story and going to Howard and trying to figure out how to pay for going to school there. And it's nowhere to be found that you took a job even temporarily at McDonald's until you run for president of the United States, halfway through an election year. But the media on the left, Rick, we're seeing these breakdowns. What's Donald Trump thinking? Is the campaign losing its mind? Is he losing his mind? And I'm like, no, Donald Trump's doing exactly what you do 2 weeks out while people are already starting to vote. You do retail politics. At this point, if you're Harris and you're having to sit down for all these long interviews now and CNN town halls, there may be a problem with voters who don't understand what you actually stand for.
Yeah, look, two major points. One, let's be super clear. Kamala Harris did not work at McDonald's. And two, the propaganda media in Washington, D.C. know she didn't work at McDonald's, but they're unwilling to say it because we have 2 weeks left. This is a scandal. This is so simple for the American people to see. When you claim you worked at McDonald's when you're the sitting vice president, you say, I worked at McDonald's a long time ago. What you're trying to say is, I'm every man, I'm relatable, I'm authentic. And we know she's a phony. She's literally a phony. She didn't work at McDonald's. If she worked at McDonald's, Jordan, we would have seen so many people who came forward to say she's the best fry cook. She's the best at, you know, doing orders. Her math skills were amazing at the teller. I mean, somebody would come out and just be gushing about how she was employee of the month. The fact is they have no photos. Her family is not trying to confirm it. They won't even tell us which McDonald's, because if they told us which McDonald's, then we could go back to the owner and say, let's see your records. The IRS knows if she worked at McDonald's, unless she, you know, somehow is faking it, then they don't have any record. The reality is the media are completely disinterested in this very simple story. Did Kamala work at McDonald's or is she lying?
Well, Rick, I mean, I don't mean to fact check you live on air here, but I did see a tweet from your account that confirmed 51 former intelligence officials say Kamala worked at McDonald's. And knowing the way our media works, I know, obviously, we understand satire, us conservatives, but those in the media may take that story and run with it because they've run with stories like that before.
Yeah, look, I tweeted that out. Obviously, anybody who knows me, I like a good joke. I'm all about humor. I love to watch comedians. And I tweeted that out as a joke, and boy, has it gone viral. Everybody loves it and is sending it back to me saying this is fantastic. But obviously, it's a play on the fact that 3 weeks before the 2020 election, 51 former intelligence officials said, don't look at that Hunter Biden laptop. Whatever is in there is Russian disinformation. And we knew then that was not true. And the media just ignored it. And then years later, it came forward that, oh, yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff in here pointing to the fact that the Bidens have really terrible business dealings with Chinese officials. And we should have looked at it 3 weeks before the 2020 election. And now we've got a very simple story. Kamala Harris is claiming she worked at McDonald's. let's investigate. I think we should stay on this story. What McDonald's? Who did you work with? No one in America or no one in Canada can come forward and say, hey, I worked with Kamala and here are the dates and here's a photo.
I do want to follow up because I think there will be a lot of stories in history books about this election. There's been two assassination attempts. There's been a coup within one party to replace their nominee. But I think one of the stories that is just bubbling up that I think will be written about is the failure of the media and this kind of being the worst moment, kind of the end of legacy media's full impact. Even though we've gone through the pandemic years, the 2016 election, all of those things, I think pale in comparison. And one of the worst symptoms I think I'm seeing of that right now is surrounded around this McDonald's story, as well as President Trump going to the Steelers game. The legacy media is having to now tell us, they think that we need to know President Trump wasn't actually an employee this weekend at McDonald's. There are multiple legacy media that are making sure that's reiterated. He was not an employee, because Americans are too dumb apparently to figure that out, as well as Newsweek tweeting out that President Trump in a likely AI generated image was shared from his Truth Social account of him in a Steelers uniform. Because once again, the American people can't be trusted to know that President Trump didn't suit up and go play football on Monday at the Steelers game he just attended. I think this is the worst symptom of it, that the media as we know it is dead, and we're just kind of living in this afterglow period where they still exist, but not really.
You remember the scene in Hunger Games when the Capitol, the Capitol, which was a symbol of Washington, D.C., clearly, was completely surrounded by media and doing their own thing and believing their stories. And then everybody else out in the rest of the country were laughing at them and watching that, you know, they had this spectacle circus going on. That's exactly what's happening in Washington, D.C. They all don't know in the newsrooms of Washington, D.C. that the rest of America are laughing at them. They have no credibility. They sit in their little newsrooms and believe each other, and they don't think that we've noticed that they're not going after the McDonald's story, or they're literally covering up everything for Kamala and Joe, and they're attacking Donald Trump nonstop. Look, CNN is unwatchable. It's literally unwatchable when you just go through segment after segment is all Democrats and Trump haters. Once in a while, they'll put in like a rhino in there to talk. But it's really atrocious. And I think that we're going to have a come to Jesus. We're going to have to recognize that when you have propaganda media regurgitating the message points of the ruling party, that's an element of fascism. First and second generation Americans see this clearly. They left that, and now they're experiencing it here in America.
I mean, because you were traveling so much, we saw your travel schedule just the next few days, and again, hitting a lot of battleground states. I was in West Virginia last week, right on the border of Pennsylvania, and kind of the activists there who had me speak at their Lincoln Day dinner, they have two kind of things that they're working on there. Big turnout in West Virginia for, you know, a big Trump victory. They want to add a lot of votes to the popular vote as well. They want to elect a lot of statewide Republicans and local Republicans throughout the state of West Virginia. And then a lot of that state on the eastern side is saying, you know what, once we get that done, and you know what, I can early vote and things like that, I'm going to go and spend some time in Pennsylvania as well to make sure and volunteer there, which sometimes is just a few minutes drive to get into Pennsylvania. So we know that activists, I've seen it, are pumped up about not just winning in their own states, but going and wherever they need to go to ensure other victories that will either be for Donald Trump and a down ballot, or for individuals who will help Donald Trump in Washington. What are you seeing right now in the swing states? What can you tell our audience? Where should they be looking? Because they're listening from all over the country. They may not be living in one, and maybe they're going to find out today that they are living in one that maybe wasn't. I know that Nebraska, that Senate race is now on the radar a lot differently than it was 2 weeks ago. In places like that, Texas with Ted Cruz, but also where President Trump is going to be heading and where you're heading.
Look, so I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. We've got a big unity event tonight. Please, if you're in Charlotte, come out and support us. Laura Trump is coming. We've got a great group of people. There'll be quite a few surrogates speaking at this rally in Charlotte. Yesterday, I was in Michigan. I go back to Michigan and Wisconsin this week. The battlegrounds of Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I would add Arizona and Nevada to those. We need people there. If you live in one of those states, go door knocking, go help. Help us elect Donald Trump. Incredibly
important. It's easy to figure out if you're in a state that is a battleground because you turn on the TV. I mean, just see. If you're getting the ads, stay right where you are. Get your vote in, early vote, in person, and then go volunteer. Go volunteer for one of the campaigns, a local campaign, statewide campaign, the presidential campaign. Get out the vote. This is what we got to do the next 2 weeks. Turn out the early vote and then turn out Election Day voting. Make sure people know the rules. Make sure they know when the last day is to register in states. It's different everywhere. We're going to be right back on Seculo, taking your calls and answering your questions. Phones 1-800-684-3110. We want to help answer questions people got. People have been online a long time too.
Yeah.
Should we start with Kathy in Tennessee? She's been on for nearly 40 minutes. And so Kathy, we appreciate you holding on to talk to us. We had to get a lot of info out. It's going to be like this the next couple weeks. We're 2 weeks out from Election Day, but we constantly want to hear from all of you. And we're going to get to as many calls as we can each day to answer your questions and to also get you the best information we can.
Kathy from Tennessee, you're on the air.
Hello, everybody. I'm in question of our vice president running for president. If there is an election interference that we went into with Pence, is this woman going to be the one that stands up there, our vice president who's running for president, to make the decision on who won this vote or the ballot counting? I would be interested in how they're going to handle this.
Yes, I mean, she would certify the victory if it was a victory for her or a victory for President Trump. I don't think, again, that if we're at a point in the country where it was a clear victory for President Trump, there may be other Democrats, and they may be, again, I've told you yesterday that I think the time, and I don't want you really focusing on it too much right now. I don't need you all focusing on it too much right now. You can donate to the ACLJ and kind of not think about it again right now. Is I think a most dangerous time post if Donald Trump wins, and Kathy, I think that's why your call is important, is going to be getting him to Inauguration Day and then getting him a cabinet through the Senate because you've got to go through those confirmations. So getting him his actual team so you're not being advised by a bureaucracy that we saw try to destroy him and it's continued to try and destroy him. I mean, let me just use examples like Jack Smith, who come out of the DOJ bureaucracy, these other bureaucrats from around various federal agencies working with political appointees. I mean, we don't have to go too far into that right now. But let's get there. I want to get to that battle. And I want to get to that battle in such a big way, Will, that Harris will have to sit up there. She's not going to be happy about it, but she's going to have to certify a Donald Trump victory because the American people across the country, including in the battlegrounds, came out in such big numbers to make sure nothing could go wrong, nothing could go weird. It's not going to be over 1,000 votes or 800 votes, and that we are going to know who the president is at least 36 hours after Election Day. I'd be very happy if within 36 hours or less, we know who the next president of the United States is going to be, because I know there's some blue states that are going to hold the voting over for at least till the next day. Pennsylvania is already saying that, and it's really tough to put together a Democrat victory and a Republican victory when you know you've got some votes that are going to still be being counted on the West Coast on Election Day, and especially if Arizona and Nevada are at play. And New Mexico, by the way, where Donald Trump now is only trailing by 3. So if you got those out there, and then the East Coast is still not coming in, that's why I'm saying 36 hours, but let's swarm the vote. I mean, like I think Rick said, swamp the vote, swarm the vote. That's why I want you all focused right now. Don't focus on who needs to certify the election victory. Don't focus on post-election day yet. I need all of you to be focusing in on voting and getting out the vote. And then let the attorneys, let the teams, let the campaigns, let us all go to battle. We'll all go to war for 3 months. Okay? But I'd like to go to war not trying to find votes that were like not counted or that were illegal votes, because that's what we tried to do last time. And we were successful. We found votes in places like Pennsylvania that were not counted. 30,000. But that wasn't enough to change the outcome in Pennsylvania. So I want to be doing the opposite. I'd like to be on the other side of that, which is they're trying to find those votes. And we're going in and saying, listen, you may find this, you may find that. But you know what? Those aren't outcome determinative. Shut the vote down. Put the Electoral College down. You know, they're going to, you know, put the Electoral College through, certify the electoral votes, and let's move on. And we know what moving on means. They're going to try to get rid of the Electoral College if we win this one. And they're going to try to sell you on getting rid of the Electoral College. They're going to run a very nonpartisan sounding campaign about empowering you and empowering your kids in the future and our daughters and our children so that their votes are directly counted. When in fact, it will mean that most of us will live in states that get no attention from Washington, D.C. at all.
That's right. Let's go back to the phone. Let's go to Mary Ellen on line 3 in Illinois. Mary Ellen, you're on Seculo.
Yes, and just following your quest or your comments there, Jordan, I had seen an article. Well, I had seen a number of you about these judges. You know, a lot of petitions to judges about these illegible voters. And I see in Arizona, and I'll just read the title here. It says, "Federal judge sides with Biden DOJ, blocks attempt to remove ineligible voters from roads ahead of election." So, and I've seen things like in Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And the question is, if that occurs, I mean, it's insane, but how is it, what's the appeal process here?
Those could still be litigated. Most of those are at the entry court level. So they're district court levels. They're still being litigated. We are fighting in Virginia. Virginia's initial decision was the governor cannot have those 6,000 people who are lawful residents. I don't know if they're all permanent, but they're lawfully in Virginia and the United States, but they did mark that they're not citizens. He wanted to remove them from the voting roll. So one, they didn't get anything that encouraged them to go to vote, and then they would be violating a law. So get them in trouble, because that would confuse people, which you could understand. And then two, take them off the voting roll. So if they did think for some reason they could go vote, when they got to the voting polling location, they would not be registered. And the person would say, "Are you a citizen? Have you done that?" And then, you know what? It would be very quickly to say, "Oh, you're not a citizen. You're not able to vote in this election cycle." And that's it. And guess who it was again? It was the DNC, Will. I mean, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing also Florida have to file a lawsuit to get that information from the Biden-Harris administration. The ACLJ is filing in Virginia, and I think will be filing in Florida as well. I know it feels like we only got 2 weeks. You can do a lot in court in 2 weeks. You named all those other states. Listen, Democrats are being pretty open about it, aren't they, Mary Ellen, right? I mean, the truth is, they're filing, whether it's the DNC or Biden-Harris, they're filing to try and keep as many people on the voter rolls as possible so that it's very difficult after the election to then go through those votes and determine which ones shouldn't have actually gone through the system. If they were technically on the voter rolls, what are those election workers supposed to do if they see somebody on the voter rolls? That's really all they can do.
And Mario, we're not going to have time to get to your call, but I'll read your question so we can answer it really quickly. He wanted to say, if they allow the illegal immigrants to remain on the voter rolls, what will that do to our government long term? If you extrapolate that out, does it mean that non-citizens could hold office?
Listen, remember, in local elections, there are already cities and municipalities in blue states and in liberal cities and municipalities that are letting non-citizens, I think this is in New York too. I mean, yes, it's a big cities. Non-citizens are able to vote in municipal elections. So could you get a non-citizen elected? Potentially. I'd have to go look at the municipal election laws there. But you're certainly getting legal votes from non-citizens who live within that municipality. They're not all illegal immigrants, but they are voting. If they were voting in the presidential election, it would be illegal if you were not a citizen of the United States. So we've got to do a lot more work. We now see the Democrat Party isn't hiding this anymore. They're filing the lawsuits to keep voters who should not be on the voting rolls on the voting rolls. So support the work of the ACLJ. We need you to donate today at ACLJ.org. There's a lot of election integrity work to do. ACLJ.org. Donate today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.